Jim Rohn said, "You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with." This week, we are chatting through what this means for us as business owners. Can who we hang out with really affect us and have an impact on our business?
Having maybe someone else in small business who's a friend or someone who you look up to, perhaps an older person, maybe a mentor, that you can say, "Hey, do you mind? Can I ask you some questions about business? Would you be able to mentor me? Would you be able to offer me some advice?" And someone who's been there, done that, who can turn around and say, "Right, you need to be careful of this. You got to look at this for costs. Okay, what's your business development plan?" All those kind of things. That's really important.
You're listening to Not Another Business Show, inspiring entrepreneurs to think smart, not small. Brought to you by Daunted to Done, your virtual project manager. To implement and execute your business ideas, you need Daunted to Done.
I would greatly recommend that someone hires someone who knows how to set up in the industry. That's very important. I would always recommend that they maybe get a mentor who can say, "Oh, well, you know, this is the sort of hurdles that you may have to jump." I would research. That's really important, because sometimes in our enthusiasm, we might trip over and fall flat on our face because we haven't researched and found out what are my obligations.
Joining other groups, being a small business owner, you can sometimes struggle a little bit with isolation and being on your own, particularly if you're working from home. You can become a bit of a shut-in. So it's kind of nice to say, well, maybe joining a group like BNI is a good thing, which is Business Networking International, and they have weekly meetings, like Alcoholics Anonymous, but for small business owners. Most towns have a Chamber of Commerce or a Business Women's Network or whatever it might be. And a lot of time it's just to, you know, get out, let people know what you're doing, but to be able to ask questions and to learn.
Mentors, support groups, accountability groups, like-minded friends and acquaintances that you can bounce ideas off and hang around. This is what the experts and I chat about this week. I've always been a big fan of the Jim Rohn quote I mentioned at the top of the show, so I've always been very mindful of who I choose to spend my time with. I don't have the energy to hang around with people who tell me it can't be done or want to whinge about why their life isn't going the way they had planned. It is my personal belief that we are all creators. We design and build our lives. So, if we're experiencing things a little tough, I always check in with myself to see what limiting pattern or behavior I am accommodating. If I find someone is annoying me, I try to remember to ask myself, what is it about that person that I don't like about myself? This week's topic is one that really sits close to my heart, so I was really keen to hear what our experts thought of it. At the top of the show, Andrew Griffiths shared his belief on the difference that a mentor and various like-minded groups of people can have on your personal and business success. And just before, we heard from Elizabeth Camillo, our forensic accounting expert, highlighting her belief in the power of mentors. Before we really deep dive into this topic, I wanted to know what having a mentor had meant to someone as successful in her career and business as Elizabeth has been.
Gosh, I think it's amazing. It's like a guiding hand that helps lift you up. She has helped me in crafting my product, in approaching potential leads. She's helped me bounce ideas off her. There are times when she said, "I don't think that's a great idea," and I think it's a great idea, and she'll say, "Well, have you thought of this, this, and this?" And you go, "Oh my goodness, I hadn't realized there was that political relationship happening in the background. I would have walked into that and that would have been a disaster." Then I've got another mentor, and he helps me with my, you know, talks to me. I bounce ideas off him. I just contacted him the other day. I said, "I'm writing this book on forensic accounting and family law, and I'd really want to get a couple of contacts because I want to put some case studies in and things like that. And he said, oh, contact such and such and such and such. They're great friends of mine. It's that sort of assistance and guidance that, you know, you just can't put a value on it. And the thing is, these people have done so well in their own professions, they're not looking to be paid. They're looking to give back now and to help people. And I think it's really important. They've gone through things that you will have to go through, so they can prepare you, they can help you, they can warn you, you know, they can guide you down another path that they think might be better. You may not see it at the time, but they'll say, but, you know, for this, this, and this, this reason, I think this is a better option for you. So I can't stress enough the importance of getting a great mentor, and choosing a mentor is really important, because you have to explain to that mentor what it means. You know, I will be seeking advice from you, I'll be seeking guidance, you know, and be clear to them what the obligation will be, you know, that you would like an hour of their time every 2 weeks, or that on one-on-one, or perhaps it'll be 20 minutes by phone once, you know, twice a week, or once a week, or once every 2 weeks. But be clear of what you expect from them, because they've got to factor that into their working day. And it may be something that, you know, you don't know what other obligations they have on the side. They might sit on boards, they might sit on committees, they might still have a growing family. There could be a whole gamut of reasons. But you want to be absolutely clear to them as to what it will incur, what it, you know, in terms of their time. You don't want to sort of get them on board saying yes, and then they find out 3 months down the track they've got to say, look, I'm sorry, but this isn't what you said you would say it would be. And then, of course, you inadvertently damage the relationship. So be very upfront and honest with your mentor, and pick the right mentor for you. Are they a specialist in the industry that you want to be in? You know, that's very important too. I mean, not all industries or not all areas will have a mentor specifically for that specialisation. You might have to think laterally when you find, you know, who works in a similar industry that can probably help me. But, you know, try. It's really important you pick the right mentor for the start. So think about what you want to get out of it. Think about what they'll get out of it. Tell them what the time obligation will be. And I can't stress enough the importance of respecting your mentor and their time. Never, ever be late. Never, ever change your appointments. Like, oh, I can't make it today because, you know, so always be on time. Always make your appointments. Always be prepared. Don't turn up with a thousand pieces of paper shuffling around. I always attend my mentoring sessions with an agenda, a bullet points of all the things I want to discuss. But I first start my meeting with what I was meant to achieve that was set up in the previous mentoring session. That's really important, because you want to show them that you're using their advice, that it's valuable, and that, you know, you're not just running around in circles chasing your tail, that the input of the mentor is valued and that it is getting you somewhere. Because if they can't see any growth for you, if they can't see that you're achieving anything, they're going to go, well, this isn't really of any benefit to either of us. I'm not getting the satisfaction in mentoring someone who's becoming successful, and that person's not becoming successful in achieving what they want to achieve. Because at the end of the day, the mentor gets their satisfaction from watching you succeed, and then hopefully you will go on then to be somebody else's mentor, and it's like paying it forward. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's really important. So get a mentor. I can't stress enough how important that is to have a mentor, but choose the right mentor.
I was really impressed that Elizabeth was able to articulate so well my thoughts on how you need to treat a mentor. To me, having a mentor has made all the difference in my career. Like Elizabeth said, though, you need to do your homework and ensure you are connecting with someone that fits where you want to go with your business and the specific area within your business that you are looking for guidance and growth in. With any mentor relationship, it is vital that you are upfront about what you are looking to achieve out of the relationship. How often do you want to meet? Weekly, monthly, or on an ad hoc basis? Do you need it to be face-to-face, or can it be over the phone or email? What is it that you are really looking for guidance in? And in my opinion, one of the most important things to outline are the reasons why you have approached this person to be your mentor. I mean, these people are really successful in their own right. They have very busy lives and probably don't really have the time at first glance to be allocating to you. So be prepared to sell yourself. Just like in a job interview, you have to let your prospective mentor know that you value and you respect them.
Because you really have to want that mentor, and they want to know that you want them badly, because then they know that you will not waste their time and that you will respect their time. There's nothing worse than people's, you know, time not being respected. I've had it done to me. It leaves a really sour taste in your mouth. And I think it's important that, you know, you are prepared, organized, but you know what you want from them. And you know that they're the right fit for you. There is nothing worse than having someone that you want to be be your mentor because they're high up in your industry, but you have a personality clash, or you don't see eye to eye, or the way they see things is a bit different from the way you see things. Maybe you're a bit more of a innovative thinker and they're not. They might be more traditional. You need to take all these considerations in place. And with both my mentors, I meet one every week for an hour. We sit down and have a coffee and we go through everything, and I'm always ready and on time. And my other mentor, we meet over the phone or by email. When I'm asking him things, but every once in a while he wants me to come in and meet him for coffee. So, pardon me. So you can make different arrangements with different mentors to suit, but stick to them. I can't stress enough, stick to them. And show results. Don't bumble from one week to the next without any results. Results are really important.
Elizabeth shared some gold in there on how to treat your mentor once you have one. But I wanted to take a step back for a minute. Let's assume you are sold on the idea of having a mentor. How do you actually go about getting your ideal person to agree to provide that guidance and coaching?
I think if you can get a warm introduction, that's always the best. But if that's not available, then I'd recommend being quite explicit in your contact to say that you're looking for a mentor and to provide some detail about the type of mentoring arrangement that you're looking for. Because if this person is not able to help you, perhaps they know someone else who is able to help you. So I would say, I'm looking for someone to mentor me. I'm looking to have a 5-minute phone call every week. I'm looking to have 1 hour over coffee once a month. I'm looking for someone I could email. Whatever is the nature of the relationship that you're looking for, I think it's really important to be upfront about that. I'm not a fan of the stealth approaches where you would contact someone on a pretext and then try and say, oh, would you consider mentoring me? People generally don't like that, and I think you're more than likely to get a refusal. Much better to be upfront and to give people a clear understanding of what would be the commitment from them.
That was our personal brand strategist, Wendy Pavey. Every day, Wendy is helping senior corporate executives future-proof their careers. She works with ASX-listed CEOs, and I figured if anyone could share with us how highly successful executives tick, it would be her. I asked her how someone should go about approaching a mentor. I also wanted to know whether it was more beneficial to meet face-to-face or whether accessing these people through technology was an acceptable point of contact.
I think that's more than adequate. You just can't expect that people will be willing to give you an hour or any amount of face-to-face time, especially, almost certainly, you're going to be approaching somebody whose success in some area you want to emulate. So they're a successful person, they're a busy person. I mean, if you could only get 5 minutes, you know, once a month from Sir Richard Branson, would you refuse that because it would have to be by Skype? I think it's you take what you can get, and don't allow the relationship, you know, potentially very valuable relationship to be constrained by just the nature of the way you're going to communicate.
I had one other question I wanted Wendy's advice on, and that was, how should you draw a mentor relationship to a close? I mean, do you say to your requested mentor in the initial conversation that I am seeking your guidance to build my business to this level or to achieve this goal, or do you just kind of let it evolve and see what comes of it?
Well, I think, again, you want to set some kind of expectations right at the beginning to say, I'm looking to move from where I am now to a certain point, so that you're creating a natural end to the commitment. Because, again, a busy, successful person is going to feel a natural hesitation about a never-ending relationship. If you can say, I'm currently working in this role. My aspiration is to move into this level of role. I'm hoping to do that over a 12-month period, and I'm looking for advice from someone like yourself who's been in that role. And then that's clearly understood. When you reach that point, then there's a natural opportunity to say to that person, look, I've gotten where I wanted to go. Your help's been invaluable. You can have a discussion about whether you want to continue it. They might feel that they've contributed all that they can, or they might now want the opportunity to mentor someone else who was where you were and bring them up to where you've gotten to. So I think that it's good to put that end on it, so it isn't seemingly limitless.
So one of my practical take-home strategies for you this week would be, if you don't already have one, make some time to research who you would like to have as a mentor. Now, it may be that you get enough inspiration, advice, and value from following and watching uber-successful public figures such as Elon Musk and Richard Branson, and that in itself can form a great style of mentor relationship. However, I would challenge you to look around your wider circle, and I'm sure you will find that there are plenty of successful people that have gone before you and built rewarding businesses that you admire. Why not spend some time and put some thought into what would it look like if you pitched to that certain person to come on board as your mentor and assist you to reaching your next level of success? By way of some context on life on the other side of the coin, I wanted to be able to offer some insight into what mentors see in the people that approach them. What do they look for, and how are you going to win their attention? For this, I needed only to look in my backyard. One such overachieving business person is the man behind Greater Springfield, the master plan community in Australia, Maha Sinathambi. Now, I happen to live and work within the Greater Springfield region, and I've gotten to know the story of how this community came to life. Maha is an extremely inspirational man, and I've had the great fortune of hearing him speak on several occasions. I've also read his book, Stop Not Till the Goal is Reached. His son Naren is carrying the torch of the Sinathambi name. He's also the marketing manager of Springfield Land Corporation and is mentor in his own right to several of the younger local Greater Springfield residents. So I asked Naren, what do you look for in a person when you're being approached to act as a mentor?
Persistence, persistence, persistence. It's very, very important because, you know, the digital realm and the social media age has changed things. People are becoming less patient. They, you know, just small things. Like instead of saying thanks TKS or please the PLS, say please, say thank you. Face-to-face communication. All of these kind of things are going to set you apart from the rest.
This idea of persistence, of pursuing a goal with dogged determination, was a trait that I had encountered with several of my experts. Now, don't get me wrong, as entrepreneurs, we all have a bit of that single-minded determination. But this was something different. I looked back through the list of my experts that I had heard this certain X factor in their voice, and realised that all of them were immigrants to Australia. All of the ones that had this unrelenting drive to create their business had begun their lives in other countries. One such expert is John Carney from America Property Source. Now, John landed in Australia in 2009. He was on a partner's visa, so was not permitted to work. He had no idea what he was really going to do, but he knew that this was an opportunity to build something great.
Looking back on that time, I mean, I had great support from my partner. Everything was new. Everything was new and exciting and different as well. But I had a goal. It really boils down to I had a goal that I was working towards, and the initial goal wasn't just to find work and earn an income. That was, you know, that was the initial goal. But the long-term goal was I didn't know how long I was going to be in Australia, and I wanted to get into real estate development. And Australia is an expensive place to be in real estate development. So that wasn't going to happen immediately. Whole new culture of business and regulations and language, business language and real estate language that I had to learn. So, I went and became a licensed agent's representative in my downtime. I read a lot and I ran a lot. To fill in the time, I exercise more than that filled in the gap. So I was in good shape, and I think that helps physically and mentally. And I had my goal. I had my long term goal, and I was working to achieve that. And I never lost sight of what I wanted to accomplish. And you know, you can fast forward to when that became a reality. Through the people that I was meeting and staying in contact and building relationships with and offering, you know, my services to and my time to, initially and when I started my business, America Property Source, it really took until 2013, you know, until I had all the pieces together in the capital and the pitch and the experience to go out and put a partnership together and start looking at development sites, you know, here in Australia.
As you can hear in John's voice, he was driven and knew he was going to succeed. He didn't know how or in what shape that success would take, but he was confident it would come off. He had the support of his family and he relied on the support of his network.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got friends that I collaborate with that are like-minded entrepreneurs, and we trade tales of what books and what podcasts and what seminars are working for us. So I think being part of a community, like having that access to community where you're not just talking about business, talking about improving yourself, is important for small business people. This year, last year I was part of a business development group, and we had accountability groups within that course I took, and you know, five or six people that couldn't have completely different businesses, completely different stages of life, but we came together and supported each other, and we still do. So I mean, that's valuable for me, and so that was on business development, furthering my business skill set last year in general. And this year I'm working on self-development, which a lot of it has to do with breathing and meditation. So there's always something new to learn.
This was really interesting to me. And I pondered whether this self-belief was something these people were born with, or was it like a muscle that was developed? Whether it was the knowledge that they had a solid group of people around them who keep them honest, so to speak, keep them focused on moving forward and not allowing them to ever accept that their ideas were not going to pay off. It was a similar conversation when I sat down with Oksana Korikova from Impero. She had immigrated from Russia and couldn't speak a word of English.
I had no office, I had no car, I had no clients, so I went to 400 networking functions a year and I met all the people And I grew the company. And then one day, one of the branding agencies said to me, they were doing rebranding for Goodman Fielder. And I didn't know who Goodman Fielder is. I thought it's a man. So I thought I'm just going to meet the Goodman Fielder man. So I go to the meeting and they say, look, we're rebranding. We have this many salespeople. We need to do this, this, this. Can you help us?
It was only as I was chatting to Oksana, though, that I realized in order for anyone to find their village, it's a numbers game. Just like sales, you have to meet a lot of people, shake a lot of hands, and slowly, slowly, one or two will rise up above the others as people that you click with.
Oh, I love networking. Like I do what I do because I love people. So it's always my business. You know, I meet amazing people and I connect with them. Some you don't connect and it's okay. But if it's all numbers, if you meet 10 people through the week, you know, it's a few people that you can connect. You know, you have to stay current. You learn what, you know, what network you're interested in. What do you like? Do you like art? Do you like, I don't know, I do yoga every day. You know, I connect with yoga community because it's, I like it. I connect with business people. But I think it's, my attitude is very, I guess maybe it's a Russian background and we're very disciplined and hungry because we were starving for so long. We're hungry. My attitude, and I always learn, I love learning and reading and seeing what's current. Like, it's exciting. Like, I think we live in very exciting times. So it's just up to you to, you know, take the opportunity and suck it on in and be active.
Oksana also mentioned one of the areas where she found her village was by completing a business course last year. The people she told me kept her focused and motivated as they were all like-minded business people, interested in growing their business and being the best that they could be. Just like other areas of our business, finding your mentor, your accountability group, your village is as much about testing the waters, trying out different people to see if you click. It made me realize that Narendra Thambi must have been as equally challenged as the rest of us in finding a mentor. I mean, here's your dad, who's this high-flying businessman, one of the richest men in Australia, but he's your dad. How does that work? I know growing up I resisted any kind of advice from my parents. How would you even begin to handle that dynamic?
I think it's definitely a different dynamic because a lot of people see him as an iconic business person and you see him as a father first. And that also reflects on his ability to prioritize his personality in different dimensions. He never really brought work home, but you could see that it was something that was very passionate within him, and from that point of view, to a certain degree, that rubs up on you, on the child. And I think that a child either embraces that vision and wants to be a part of it, or they say, I do love it, but that is my father or that is my mother's career path, and I wish to choose a different path.
The lesson I took away from that was the struggle we all face to create our own identity and not to walk in the footsteps of the people who have gone before us. Seems as though the internal battle for this identity is the same whether we have high-flying parents or parents who are just getting on with living.
You see this person who is trying to pass on their passion to you, but you want to also figure out whether this is what you want to do.
Maha casts a big shadow and has certainly had an interesting journey to reach the heights of success that he has today. So I found it refreshing to hear Naren talk about struggling to find his own passion. While I was chatting with him, though, I realized that, similar to his father, he has a drive to succeed, to stamp his name on the work that he does, and to create something that is bigger than just him. That drive I felt from my conversation with Naren was the same sense of determination I heard from all of my experts that had relocated to Australia. I pondered whether a certain amount of this determination came from the fact that they had already achieved a great personal upheaval in leaving their birth country to create something from scratch in a country where they had no network. One of the things I have realized over the years is something I mentioned earlier, the need to test and measure who your village is going to be. Often we can fall into the trap of looking for people who will simply validate our beliefs or ideas as opposed to providing honest feedback. Hearing that an idea is off-focused or not fully formed can be a tough pill to swallow at times. I was chatting this through with Christian Marnie, the retail guy, and he shared with me the perils he sees around accountability groups. You know, getting together with a group of people who will help you meet your goals you set for yourself. And this concept of having a group of yes men around you was something that he was very wary of also.
There's the part where I don't necessarily sign up to and agree with the whole hang it out there and see what feedback you get. I just think that we live in a societal, habit where we don't really tell people, regardless of whether we're close to them or not, what we really think, especially in a public forum. I've been in networks and mastermind groups where it's like, oh, this is my idea and what do you think? And everyone, and whatever the first person kind of comes out there with, if they're like a dominant figure in the group, and it's like, oh, I think that idea is awesome and that's going to take off, you know, 8 of the next 10 people are going to follow that same direction with, yeah, and we support it. And it could be the shittest idea ever. So there's that whole thing. I think that you can put it out there for feedback, but I reckon there's almost got to be a little bit of ignorance. You know, I think I've read something about Steve Jobs having just this element of ignorance that was able to push past all of the naysayers. And it wasn't about being arrogant. It was just being in a space where I just don't see how you can possibly see that this isn't going to work. You know, it's not being argumentative. It's just like, I don't see that. I think that this will work. You know, I think that this has definitely got an opportunity attached to it that is it's unrealized so far. When people are talking in that type of language, then I think that that's the ignorance that I'm talking about. Arrogance is when, oh, yeah, definitely I agree with you. But, you know, I'm going to do it anyway, you know, and I think arrogance is different to ignorance. And I think that you kind of got to be a little bit kooky almost to get a startup idea through the naysayers and the people who are going to tell you it's not going to work.
Interesting take on it, huh? And as I mentioned, I certainly have seen the follow the leader approach in accountability groups. But the times when I have realized that I was simply receiving validation rather than high quality feedback, well, I think what that did for me was to remind me that you need to have your wits about you when you are selecting your village. I've mentioned before that I'm part of a couple of accountability groups, which I love. And part of what I enjoy so much about these groups is the ability to get clear and direct feedback on an idea. So if I put a concept on the table, I can say to these people, this is my target audience, here is where they hang out, here is where they are likely to come across my product, here are their problems, and here is how my solution is going to help them. Now, what do you think? Then I know that this group will be giving me feedback based on how they think my target audience will react. They will tell me if I need to do more market research, if they think I'm barking up the wrong tree, or if they think that it just needs any kind of additional work. The other point I should make about this group is that I have selected from all of them people from my ideal client demographic. So I know I am getting feedback based on the clients that I'm actually trying to reach. And I think this is a really good point to remember. It is fine to have a few different groups that you rely on for feedback, but if you really want targeted feedback, you should take the time to develop a core group of people that represent your target demographic that you can rely on to provide honest and open feedback to you. This was a point that was echoed again by Wendy.
belonging to accountability groups and having an accountability buddy has been just fundamental in shifting from a home-based solopreneur to somebody who has had much more success, is much more connected, is able to leverage those connections to increase the success of my business, you know, almost effortlessly. So I'm a passionate advocate for accountability groups, but primarily for pure accountability. And by that, I don't mean a support group, which is a separate thing in my mind. A support group might be people who are in similar situation to you and they offer you support. They might offer you comfort if you're dealing with some challenging situation in your life, encouragement, and that more of an emotional support. For me, accountability is you say what you're going to do and the people in your group or your accountability buddy hold you to that. If you're not able to reach your goals, they will help you understand why that might be. They're not there to listen to you talk about the things that have gone wrong or the reasons why this has happened or anything that's taken place. They're there to say, you want to get from point A to point B. Did you do that? If not, what stopped you, so that you can identify those barriers and work on them. And that for me is really a key difference. I mean, accountability groups can take all forms. I've belonged to in-person groups, groups that meet over Skype, and it's really about finding the group that is the right fit for you, where, again, you've got a clear understanding of what's the purpose of the group, and you've got someone in a leadership role or a moderator's role who's willing and able to keep the group on track. I also have an accountability buddy, and I love the flexibility of that arrangement. It's not a regularly scheduled meeting or conversation. It's more on an as-needs basis, and that has been a huge asset to me and a reason for a lot of recent success, is that ability to run it by somebody, to say, what do you think about this? And to have someone to say, no, that's off focus. Forget about that. That's just another bright, shiny distraction. Let's go back, stick to the knitting, and work on what you said you were going to work on. I mean, I think that's invaluable.
I got chatting to Wendy around this whole concept of accountability, and it led me to mention to her that over the last 10 years since I've gone into business for myself, that my whole social group has slowly changed. Gradually, friends that were employees began to fall by the wayside until I looked around one day and realized that the vast majority of people that I associate with on a regular basis these days are also in business for themselves. It got me to thinking, this whole Jim Rohn quote of being the sum of the five people you hang out with, whether we get more focused as we get older or whether we just begin to seek out those who understand the path that we're walking?
That is a great question. I mean, we all would all like to think that that wouldn't happen, that we wouldn't leave somebody behind if they weren't following the same path that we are. But it's also true that you do need to be surrounded by like-minded people if you're going to do something very difficult. And it really doesn't matter what it is, whether it's you might be wanting to run a half marathon or you know, stop smoking or save your money for a holiday. When you do anything that sort of moves away from what your social group has expected you to do or wants you to do, if they want to go out to a great new restaurant when you want to save your dollars, that's very difficult. And if you've got people in your social group that are not going to be supportive of your business goals or who are uncomfortable with your business success for whatever reason, then it's probably a natural process that you will want to socialize with them less. And I'll be honest, there have been a couple of people in my social group who've talked about setting up their businesses, and I've jumped in with a lot of enthusiastic advice and suggestions and offering books and podcasts and so on. And you straight away realize they're not really serious about it because you've suddenly pushed it way beyond the point that they were willing to go. And that's okay. I think we're in those couple of instances, I've probably just stopped talking about those topics. I just let it alone, talk about other things. And there are plenty of topics where I don't agree with family or friends. And you just avoid those topics so that you can enjoy each other's company and stay in harmony.
Now, you might remember our accountant, Robert King. He's the accountant who's proud to be boring, dependable, and precise. He has an interesting take on the whole idea of who you associate with and the value that they bring to a situation.
Yeah, look, certainly I've always been a big believer that you should surround yourself with experts in their field. And sometimes that's not always possible, but as soon as you meet someone who you know can add value to your business or is going to be useful, it's important to keep them as a contact on your list and mix with them whenever and wherever possible. And a big part of that is doing networking groups. And there's a lot of different ones out there. Some are good, some are bad. Some work better than other than some work for others. So if I have to name a few, just a couple, sort of, you've got the Chamber or BNI, and there's a lot of them out there. And I suppose that particularly when you're starting up, having not only experts, but just having a wide range of knowledge around you that you can feed off and ask questions whenever you like. So I've had people within my particular networking group who are new startup businesses who will just ask me questions that, and they're simple startup questions, but I don't have a problem answering it. That's what they're there for. That's what I'm there for. And I've probably saved them hundreds of dollars just by having that chat. So to have people around you that you can just ask a quick question to then say, well, okay, obviously I need to get more advice in that area, but let's go further, is invaluable. You need those people around you because you don't, the old saying is you don't know what you don't know. And quite often with those sort of networking groups, you get to know a lot of stuff about a lot of things.
Robert refers to it as finding different experts in their field and surrounding yourself with them. For me, I always look for ways that I can bring added value to a situation as well. But that could be me, as I always like a fair exchange of energy. It's one that a lot of us don't give a lot of thought to. And that is having the core group of people from different areas within our business that we can catch up with over a coffee and just test our thinking. It might be a printer that you can sanity check your ideas about your latest brochure on before getting it printed. It might be someone who has a passion for social media that you can run your thoughts about an ad campaign by. Whatever the circumstances, though, it is as important as business owners that we take the time to get to know people within our wider sphere of influence. It was time to check in with our business coach, Matt Dunstan from Rising Tide Ventures. One of his favourite drums to beat is the fact that we need to have our village around us. Matt is a sailor and enjoys all things nautical, hence the business name Rising Tide Ventures. And I'm always reminded of the quote by John F. Kennedy, "The rising tide lifts all boats," whenever I speak to Matt about the subject of associating with the best people you can. So I thought it was fitting to give a say to him.
You need to collaborate with people. We are all more successful when we work with others than we are on our own. And so if you don't have a group around you of, you know, a professional group around you of colleagues or supporters or people you network with or whatever it might be, then find one. If you don't have access to, you know, any sort of business advice, then get some.
I'm a big fan of the collaboratory effort. This podcast for me is a perfect example. I could not have achieved getting this show to air without the time and the input of my experts. So I love having smart people around me. To bring this week to a close, I wanted to give the final say to Wendy. While we had this great conversation over today's topic, I was almost surprised to find out that she had sought no formalized mentorship over the years. She explained that during her corporate career, she had had a few bosses that had acted in the role for a short space of time, but in her own business, she had preferred to seek the counsel of people through the informal path of reading books, following their profiles on social media, and exploring the way they've come to be portrayed through the media and what that has meant for her business. It was when we were about to wrap up the conversation, though, and we were chatting about how our social circles alter over the years to reflect where we're at on our journey, that she shared this interesting nugget that I feel sums up the spirit and intent of today's quote perfectly.
It's certainly true. I think the majority of people that I consciously associate with now are, they are successful in a way that's important to them, because just as in that Jim Rohn quote, which has been important to me for a long time, that I want to be surrounded by people who will offer me encouragement, as opposed to for their own reasons make it harder for me, or just create an atmosphere where I don't feel comfortable and confident in talking about the things that are now important to me.
If you've enjoyed today's show, why not share a review on iTunes? And don't forget to connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at Daunted to Done. If you have an idea for an upcoming show, drop us an email to info@dauntedtodone.com.au. Not Another Business Show is brought to you by Daunted to Done, your virtual project manager.
Well, that's it for another episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing from our experts on the value that their broader village brings to them. I hope it left you thinking about the people you associate with, and whether or not you may have the opportunity to introduce a mentor to your business. This week's checklist, The 7 Things to Be Aware of When Choosing Your Village, will be available for downloads on the Daunted to Done website shortly. A big thank you, as always, to this week's experts, Australia's number one small business author and all-round Mr. Nice Guy, Andrew Griffiths, our forensic accountant, Elizabeth Camillo, John Carney from American Property Source, Christian Marnie, the retail guy, Oksana Korikova from Impero, Wendy Pavey from Executive Brand, Matt Dunstan from Rising Tide Ventures, and Naren Sinathambi from Springfield Land Corporation. As always, though, the biggest thanks goes to you for listening in. A big thanks for the reviews that are coming in on iTunes and Stitcher. Please keep them coming, we really appreciate it. Don't forget to join in on the conversation. I'd love to hear about your village. Who do you hang out with, and what difference does it make to you and to your business having a good group of people surrounding you? Tweet me at Daunted2Done, and remember to use the hashtag NABS, Not Another Business Show. And if you have any ideas for topics you'd like the experts to cover, you can drop me an email to info@dauntedtodone.com.au. Don't forget, the 2 is a number 2. Till next week, spend your time wisely and have a great week.